Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Come and celebrate America's big anniversary with us today on Advanced. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Simon, and you are joining me and my co-host, Linda, in the studio today for the July History article. I know, Linda, I suppose the name of this program for someone like me and for many of our listeners could be Talking to an American about America, because there are a lot of things in here that I am not super familiar with, or at least am not familiar with the point of view that is represented in this article. The article, of course, is called Spirit of 1776. What is this 1776?
Well, that is the year that America, the United States of America, gained its independence from Great Britain. And that is, that is the anniversary that we're celebrating this year, the 250th anniversary.
So when we say spirit of 1776, what do we mean by that spirit?
Independent spirit, that spirit that allowed Americans to stand up and to fight for independence.
So when we say spirit here, we're not talking about like the ghost of 1776. We're talking about like the feeling, the ideas, that sort of thing. Okay. And it tells us in our subtitle that this is the 250th anniversary of the United States, and so it has inspired a film and a book. And there's actually a very famous name. I don't know if he's globally famous, but he is definitely famous among Americans for his documentaries, because I think he makes documentaries for PBS, right?
Perhaps, yeah.
Uh-oh, maybe not as famous among Americans as I thought. I'm pretty sure he is the producer of the content that has kind of kept PBS as a TV channel alive through the years.
And PBS is public broadcasting.
Yeah. And his documentaries really are interesting. They tend to be historical, but they deal with like American culture stuff, and they sort of follow the development of that thing. They tend to be very long, like multi-part documentaries, right? Have you seen any of them?
I don't recall,
I think there was one. You're clearly not a fan of this guy. Do you know his name? We should tell them his name.
He's mentioned,
Ken Burns. Yeah, Ken Burns is his name.
In the article.
I know he's made documentaries about like World War II, the Vietnam War, a bunch of other stuff. I'm sure we'll get to all of that in the article today. But nonetheless, he has produced something very special for this special anniversary year for Americans. And so, listeners, because this is oriented towards the spirit of 1776 and not the facts of 1776, today's article should provide you with some insight into the ways Americans think and feel and view the world. When I read through the article, that's what it sort of gave me pause to question about and think about.
So did any of those insights clash with your thinking or kind of your thought process?
Well, I'm not sure our listeners are familiar with this, but Americans talk about the original 13 colonies, 13 colonies, but I think at the time there were in excess of 18 colonies in North America. Now I'm, you know, kind of including some of the Caribbean sort of things there, but there were, I think, covered in British North America, there were multiple colonies outside of the 13 colonies anyway. Not all of them declared independence. So American views on history tend to, you know, focus obviously on the view of those 13 colonies that became the United States, but not so much on the other colonies that opted out. And so just there's a very different narrative and perspective about a lot of the events that comes to you through history class and growing up outside of the United States, but in North America. So yeah, I would say there's a little bit of a...
Well, obviously, it is going to be a more American-centric, America-centric.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, yeah, That's just the way it is because Americans are writing.
It's about the American anniversary, right? Yeah. But it's interesting. I'll point stuff out as we go through. There's some uses of terms and some sort of historical events that Americans find to be particularly significant historically that I would not have thought of as being so historically significant. Though, you know, I could be wrong. I'm not a historian, you know. Nonetheless, that's just kind of, you know, what I learned growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Different than some of what you learned, no doubt.
Well, it is good to get a different perspective, a Canadian's perspective.
Well, especially because the United States dominates news mm-hmm. and things so much. It's always good to have some insight into why, you know, for me as a non-American, like mm-hmm. when I watch American news, half the time I'm like, what is wrong with these people? Like, but what they are doing is clearly driven by deep feeling and a very clear worldview. Like they're behaving consistently, at least in their own minds, right? And so it's good to know what is going on in people's minds. So, I mean, it's always good mm-hmm. to get to understand other views from people from different cultures and countries.
Yes, right? Definitely.
It's helpful. Mm-hmm. You just have to do it with a very relaxed attitude. You don't want to get too
emotional.
Too upset. Yeah, too involved in other people's emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Nonetheless, listeners, if you have your July magazine, I would encourage you to open it up to our history article. We're going to do 3 readings today. If you don't have your magazine, I would encourage you to get one because it's the easiest way to support us here at Advanced Radio. But without further pause, let's get into our first reading. So grab that magazine, open it up, and let's read together.
Spirit of 1776. The 250th anniversary of the United States inspires a film and a book. A renowned documentary filmmaker on the American Revolution. Ken Burns revolutionized the way historical documentaries were made before the internet was even a common term. So it's hardly a shock he'd eventually tackle America's fight for independence in his latest opus, The American Revolution. What is so spectacularly inspirational is the men, the women, the Native Americans, the European ancestors, and the blacks who were kidnapped, who are all central to the creation of the story, Burns said at the Carter Center, Atlanta, Georgia. The heart of the story is how, for the first time in human history, people are citizens and not subjects. We are asking human beings to take on this incredibly difficult responsibility. It still is today, more than ever.
Okay, so we begin here by learning the name of our documentarian, Ken Burns, and it tells us that he revolutionized the way historical documentaries were made before the internet was even a common term. So he revolutionized documentaries. I don't know, did you grow up watching documentaries in school?
Not really. We didn't really watch that many documentaries.
I feel sad for you. It was a regular part of social studies class when I was growing up. The teacher rolled in the television.
Yeah, I remember the TV, you know, getting rolled in, but
and everyone would relax because they knew it wasn't going to be too wild of a class.
It was a treat, though, to get the TV rolled in. Like, it was usually for a movie that was fun. It was.
Oh, really?
I don't think they used it that much for educational purposes.
What I will say is the documentaries that we watched were, well, when we were watching them in my generation, it was frequently like media clip, like clips from movies with commentary from the teacher.
Mm.
But I know the generation older than me watched some of the most boring videos ever put together as documentaries. And I think that's probably because I was in school in a time when Ken Burns was already revolutionizing documentary. So what I would point out about the difference between those older videos and the documentaries of the style that he kind of introduced is that they weren't just informative information bits. They mm-hmm. were like telling stories.
Mm-hmm.
They had like characters that you sort of followed the development mm-hmm. of. They spanned periods of time. They showed, you know, interesting images. They would like, zoom in on the real object so you could sort of see, for example, like the Declaration of Independence or different things like that. So it was visually appealing, had an interesting story, and I think that is largely because of Ken Burns.
Yeah, and that's what makes a documentary interesting, not just clips of video or facts put together that doesn't tell like a whole story. That would just be, yeah, very boring, which is probably what you're referring to.
The generation before. Well, you know, like
I
grew up watching this television show. You can no doubt see a clip of this on YouTube, listeners, but the show was called The Wonder Years, and it was about baby boomers growing up in the 1960s. But their science teacher within the show was on for, you know, a number of years, and the science teacher would always put on these videos and then sort of do this deadpan voice, like no expression in his voice, the butterfly emerges from his cocoon, things like that. And that was very much what I associated with documentary.
But
not the case after this. So nonetheless, you know, it's time for him to get around to the American Revolution. Why? Because it is a major topic in the American consciousness. And here they actually describe it as, well, his latest opus. Do you know what an opus is?
Yes, it's a great work. And usually it refers to something that has been composed, let's say something written. Or, well, here it's a film, but it's usually a composition, like a musical composition.
Yeah, I usually think of it as music. But that's because there was a famous movie called Mr. Holland's Opus.
That's why you associate it, a music teacher who
wrote this piece of music.
Right. Usually it's used to describe a musical composition.
It's not a very common word, though, outside of maybe the artistic community or the creative community, right? Like you wouldn't say, you know, like if you're working at a bank, you wouldn't say, oh, like this set of policies is my opus.
Right. You would not.
No, it's purely sort of within the creative domain.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, as we move on to our next paragraph, it says, what is so spectacularly inspirational is the men, the women, the Native Americans, the European ancestors, and the blacks who were kidnapped, who are all central to the creation of this story. Now, is he talking about the people who worked on the film here?
No, what the content is
central to the creation of the story. He's talking about the characters in the story. So like the historical people, right?
The people who are part of the revolution.
Okay. And this is what Ken Burns himself says, basically, when he's talking about the film. He goes on to say, the heart of the story is how, for the first time in human history, people are citizens and not subjects. I think usually when our listeners use this word subjects, they're talking about subjects in school, but that is not what we're talking about here at all. What are we talking about when we say subjects?
Topic, the focus, what it's about.
Well, when it's in school, but when we're contrasting it with citizens, we're talking about people who live under a king. So subjects of the king are the people who have to obey the king, right? And so they're drawing a contrast here by saying people are citizens, not subjects. So there's kind of this idea that, I don't know, if Americans place a lot of importance in the idea that America has no king. Now, when I grew up, we were sort of taught that the president was effectively king for 4 years because they could veto things. So we were sort of brought up to view America as a place that had temporary kings that switched after a period of time. But Americans don't think that way very often.
So what do you think of your prime minister? Because the prime minister is the equivalent of president.
Not really. Like prime ministers can't veto things. If the cabinet, meaning the, you know, the people in the prime minister's party, decide they don't like the prime minister, he can be booted the same day or she can be booted the same day. They just hold a vote and change their leader and then you have a new prime minister. So prime ministers don't have anything like the ability to hold on to power that presidents do.
Well, presidents are not supposed to be like kings. And in the history of the, you know, presidency of the United States, presidents who are elected into office, like they had that mentality They didn't try to be kings.
The catch is the president is your head of state, but our head of state is our king, like King Charles.
It's still
Canada,
the monarchy.
Right.
Okay.
So it's like the prime minister is not meeting with his equal if he meets with your president.
No, I'm saying he here. The king has nothing actually to – no involvement really in the running of the Canadian
government. Well, sort
government
of, except they have a representative and laws can't be enforced until they agree to them and sign off on them. So most of that's like kind of symbolic.
Yeah, I think it's just mostly – pretty much all symbolic.
Mostly symbolic. But it's a very different, I would say, attitude or way of thinking about things.
Yeah, because America, after they gained independence, they cut off, they didn't want to be part of the Commonwealth. Like a lot of colonies, after they gained independence, they still remained part of the Commonwealth, like Canada, like Jamaica. And they still had, the monarchy still represented something in the country. But with the U.S., it's like they wanted to do away with that. It's like, no, we don't want any part of the monarchy. Like, it has no importance in this independent state.
So we've pursued a little bit of a rabbit here. We've gone down a rabbit trail off topic a little bit. But the point being, if you are the subject of a king, you don't get to vote for who the king is. If you're the subject of a queen, you don't get to vote for who the queen is. But if you're a citizen of a republic like America, you get to vote for the president.
Then theoretically, every citizen has a right to, or has a vote and a say. But that's
so this level of power, albeit indirect power, is, the heart of this story. For the first time in history, following the American Declaration of Independence, the people were given this power, this citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether that's, purely true or just sort of interpretation, I suppose British people would say they had parliament and voted for their members of parliament, but they didn't get to pick the king or the queen. They were just subjects. So there's a difference mm-hmm. between being a subject, which basically everyone was at the time, and being a citizen, as in a person who is in a democracy. And that's really just what they're pointing out. So that brings us to our second reading. Let's jump into it and go through it fairly quickly.
A thorough exploration. As an independent filmmaker, Burns has been exploring everything from baseball and the American Civil War to the national parks and jazz. He remains determined to give viewers thoughtful, nuanced, in-depth documentaries. His World War II doc, The War, took 6 years to complete. The Vietnam War took 10.5 years. American Revolution ate up another decade. Burns works on multiple projects at once. Christopher Brown, a Columbia University history professor who spent several years helping Burns on the American Revolution, said a truncated timetable would not allow for new thought or to discover a new voice. I've been teaching the American Revolution my entire career, yet I learned so much from this documentary I did not know. That is scholarship.
All right. So, Linda, they basically begin this reading by listing off the different topics that have been tackled by these mega documentaries. So a few of them here, actually two of them were the ones that I had mentioned, the World War II one and the Vietnam War one. Mm-hmm. But there are a number of other ones that are sort of culturally key to American identity, right? Like baseball.
Yeah, baseball, the national pastime.
National parks and jazz. Yeah, jazz I would not have thought of as key to the American identity, but I suppose it has played a big role.
Yeah. It has.
So you haven't watched these series?
I don't think so. I mean, the more we talk about it, his name seems more familiar, but I don't know if I've actually watched a full documentary by him.
It's one of those things they really are, like 12 1-hour parts.
Mm-hmm.
They're like long documentaries. And you can sort of see that they continue here. The other thing they're noting here is how long he spends on each of these documentaries. And you might think to yourself, this man must be 120 years old, but he isn't, because there's a note right at the end of the paragraph there, which says, Burns works on multiple projects at once. So he has sort of a team of people working on each one. He is able to take care of more than one documentary
series.
Yeah,
that's why he's able to cover so many topics. And I do like documentaries if they're well done. Like they can be very interesting. And the best part is you learn so much from it, like actual stuff.
But this has created an advantage. You know, and they talk about that in the second paragraph here, a professor from Columbia University named Christopher Brown, who apparently helped with the American Revolution Project, talks about how basically spending so much time is helpful. So the term he uses here is, he says, a truncated timetable. When something's truncated, it means it's cut short. So it's like rushed. And if you had a truncated timetable, so if you were rushing to produce this documentary, you wouldn't have the chance to explore like new thought, discover new voices. Now, new thought there, what I think that basically means is I would actually put new thought and new voices together and mean that you find different experts or different people who have different views on an event, right? Mm-hmm. So new ideas about it would be thought, and then voices would be like different perspectives and ways of looking at the situation. And so when you spend 10 years, you have an opportunity to talk to all kinds of people, and the result being that you get a wide range of perspectives and sort of a deeper understanding of the topic.
Yeah, and the time allows you to follow up on leads, like maybe you hear about something from this one person and you're able to follow up, and so that you can include that. If you were on a truncated or shorter timetable, you wouldn't be allowed to do that.
Now, this professor says this is scholarship. So basically, he's saying these documentaries are of very high academic accuracy and value there.
Yeah, and that's very important.
As a result of this process. And so I think the big result of this is that you have a good story, and that's what we're tackling in our third reading.
Filming a good story. Burns used paintings, close-ups of diary entries, documents, letters, and more maps than all previous documentaries combined, he noted. And he spent hundreds of hours filming reenactments on battlefields from New Hampshire to Georgia. The most intriguing figure in the doc, Burns said, was America's first president. He is deeply flawed, Burns said. He's rash. He risked his life on the battlefield. He was spectacularly heroic in time's foolish ways. He makes two glaring errors in two big significant battles. Yet he remains the most important person in the story. Burns noted that good stories allow for complexity.
Okay, so filming a good story here. I guess the first paragraph kind of talks about how that is presented. We actually mentioned this in our introduction. He uses lots of like paintings and images, does close-ups of them, and they sort of all flow together with the story that's being told while you're listening. But in addition here, they talk about reenactments. What are reenactments?
That is when a group of people, they act out, like
usually
let's say,
middle-aged men. Yes. Let's be honest,
yeah. White men.
Yeah,
act out. Let's see, a battle scene from a war.
They dress up in the historical outfits.
And they put on the full garb and they have like muskets or whatever.
They march. They replay these battles and historical events.
They fully
for people to watch.
Act it out. Yes.
Yeah, they reenact it. Act out. Again. And so he then goes on to talk about the most intriguing or interesting figure in the story, America's first president. Who was that?
George Washington.
Oh, yes. George. He of the cherry tree.
Yes.
Yes.
He has a reputation. I mean, besides being America's first president, he has a reputation of always telling the truth. That's what we learned as kids, you know.
Yeah. With the tree.
Yes, with the cherry tree that he chopped on the cherry tree. But that is image that you get of George Washington, and then he's on the dollar bill. So you see him.
Yeah, he's presented
everywhere.
As this wonderful, noble character. But what Ken Burns is sort of saying here is he is deeply flawed, which means he actually had a lot of problems.
Yes, well, so, he's human. It's
that's
just
right.
Like natural.
What did you expect? What did you expect?
But that's the thing with reputation over time, like what people remember about you, the legacy that you have left. And for George Washington, it is this pristine leader that was so courageous and so wonderful and always told the truth.
Well, and in particular, he's the reason, he's the biggest argument against presidents being kings, because he decided to quit after two tries at it, right?
Yeah.
And sort of established a pattern.
Right.
That was
the
later broken
limit,
by a president later. But then when that president broke the rule later, that was Roosevelt following the Depression. He did three terms. But when that happened, it was sort of upsetting to the American public, I suppose, to the point that they changed the Constitution to limit presidents to two terms to follow the George Washington model. So he had a huge effect on the way Americans think government should run. Mm-hmm. But he was rash, which means he did things without thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Like he risked his life on the battlefield. He was spectacularly heroic in foolish ways. He made two glaring errors. Glaring basically means obvious.
Yes,
like
very
anybody
obvious.
Who looked at this would be like, what is that guy doing? It is glaring, like bright like the sun.
Mm-hmm.
It is so clear. And despite that, he remains the most important person in the story.
Because people forget those, regardless of how glaring the error was, people forget those things and just remember his good qualities.
Yeah. So, a documentary to watch out for this year, friends. It should be out now, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in July. Tomorrow, we're going to continue talking about this subject, but we're not going to be talking about Ken Burns documentaries, right? We're just going to continue on with this American history, War of Independence kind
of
theme.
Right. We're going to be talking about an author.
So listeners, be sure to join us again tomorrow. We're out of time for today, but we're glad you joined us here in the studio for Advanced. Until tomorrow, I'm Simon.
I'm Linda.
Saying goodbye for now.
Goodbye.